Blake Murphy from The Athletic to talk some Raptors offseason. Blake, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well, thank you very much. We've had a few days to digest the ending of the Raptors season in Game 7 against the Boston Celtics. Now that we've had some time to assess that game and look ahead to the offseason, what do you make of the title defense for a plucky Toronto Raptors team?
Yeah, I think it was kind of what you hope for heading into the year. And I went back and looked at some of my preview stuff from before the season, and I feel awful about this, but I had them going out in the second round to the Boston Celtics in the 2-3 matchup in the East. So it's not too surprising. And I think the way in which they got there, an elite defense and an offense that struggled in the half court, was kind of what we predicted. And then I think, so much of the value and the fun in the season was that, to their credit, they raised the bar much higher than that over the course of the year with this incredible, spirited regular season performance through the loss of Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, through a ton of injury trouble, into being one of the best teams in the bubble. And then, the honest truth is they ran into a team they're roughly equal with, and they came out on the wrong end of that series. So, I know there are people who are a little disappointed because of how good they were in the regular season and that it was a title defense. But I think, had you told people before the season you're going to have a really fun year and you're going to go out in 7 in the second round, I think most people would have been pretty content with that. Now, within that, there's the early season optimism about Siakam and how that kind of eroded a little bit by the end. And I think that's probably what's coloring some people's opinion, if they are a little more negative about how the season went. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I would imagine that that plays a part in kind of how people are, decompressing from this.
And the Siakam storyline, I think, is one of the more fascinating ones because once Kawhi Leonard leaves, it's okay. Well, this is a dude who stepped up in game one of the NBA Finals. Let's see what he can do. And just a few moments ago, we find out he's NBA all second team. So, it wasn't bad. But the playoffs is going to leave a tough taste in people's mouths. How do you view Pascal Siakam with the Raptors going forward? Like, is he one of those franchise cornerstone type of guys?
Yeah, I think the fact that he got all NBA second team is a good reminder of just how good he was before the hiatus. And I know, he didn't have the best reseeding games, and then he really struggled in the playoffs. But that does tell you the level he was playing at beforehand. And I know, Raptors fans should know pretty intimately by now just how good Jason Tatum is. And at the time of the hiatus, there was a legitimate argument to be made whether Siakam or Tatum was ahead of the other at that point. And there's statistical profiles were very, very similar, as are their, general quality of defense. So he's not far removed from being in the conversation as one of the 10 to 15 best players in the league. He obviously wasn't that during the playoffs, and the fact that he made second team all NBA actually kicks his max contract up even higher now. So the bar he has to clear performance wise is higher. But I think, a helpful thing to keep in mind too is that that extension he signed doesn't kick in until next year. The expectation was always that it would take a little bit of time for him to take that next step. And what was asked was turning ending for sure. And then, if you're the Raptors or you're a Raptor fan, the thing you have to hope is that he's the type of guy who takes that kind of failure the right way and funnels it productively instead of kind of letting it erode his confidence or anything like that.
Well, and the development that he's made, like it was very much talked about last year during the run through the NBA Finals to a championship, and then in the early part of this year, where it was, can you win breakout star 2 years in a row? Can you win most improved player in back-to-back years? But the development is still there for a guy who not a lot was expected of him.
Yeah, exactly. And skill-wise, you see some things where, you watch what he looked like at the start of the year compared to what he looked like at the end of the year. And there was a little bit of, I don't want to like do doctor from a distance, but like some of his, his jump shots tended to miss short a little more often. He seemed to have a little less burst in transition. So maybe it was a case where the jump in minutes and the jump in usage together was, maybe just a little too much too soon. And then you look skill-wise and the way that teams who were game planning for him later in the year and in the playoffs kind of slowed him down. And while the handle needs to tighten up for sure, the Celtics kind of sat on that spin move. They got in under his hands when he posted up. So I think, I think if you're an optimist, there are a lot of actionable things that Siakam would be able to take back from that series against the Celtics and build from. So, you know, you look back to his year, his rookie year, where he started half a season and then wound up in the G League and kind of built his way back and rebuilt his shot and rebuilt his offensive package. You know, this is a guy who's been through this before. It hasn't been linear. It's been step back, two steps forward, back, two steps forward. So, you know, it's not a sure thing. Some guys don't make it to that top level. They top out at the second level. But it's too early to, you know, write off Siakam as this being his ceiling. It was only his fourth season and first season in that role.
Looking at the rest of the Raptors, I want to get into some offseason talk, but everything surrounding this offseason kind of has to have the focus of next offseason with it. We've seen many a team plan a couple years out to try to sign someone in free agency. And from a Raptor viewing perspective, I remember when it was considered a win that LaMarcus Aldridge considered giving the Raptors an interview. So, like, they've come kind of a long way, but is potentially waiting to see what Giannis wants to do, or maybe even Kawhi again. Well, what they want to do in free agency one full offseason from now. Is that a viable strategy for the Raptors?
I mean, it's definitely something they're going to keep in mind. And Siakam, to be honest, Siakam making second team and bumping his max higher complicates that further. I had a big breakdown today of, you know, what does the cap sheet look like if you re-sign Van Vliet? And you're trying to keep 2021 clean, and it gets much more complicated if Siakam is making an extra $3-5 million a year over those seasons. So it's going to be a tough needle to thread. But what the Raptors front office has approached these situations and the perspective they've approached them with in the past was kind of, you know, take care of your guys, make sure you have the talent base, and if you need to adjust off the cap later, by, you know, paying a first and a second to trade away Damari Carroll, by giving away Corey Joseph to clear space, you know, they're willing to do those things. So, you know, it's a little tight looking at it right now. Like, say Norman Powell picks up his option for 2021, Fred VanVleet gets $18 million a year, and Siakam's deal's on the books. You know, it's tough to find your way to max space without losing one of those guys. But I think it's a case where, you know, the Raptors will certainly keep that in mind for trades or for mid-tier free agents. But it's something that, you know, if they trust with Bobby Webster in the front office, they'll be able to tiptoe if necessary. If, you know, it's one of those things, right, where, like, you still have to build your team. But if Giannis calls you and says, I want to come, you figure it out. It's really that's what it comes down to.
And yeah, when you look at that, like, they still have to put a team out there, like you said, but we're not expecting any 3 or 4 year contracts for not their own guys this offseason, hey?
Right, exactly. And, like, maybe someone gets a multi-year eating up a chunk of the mid-level or something like that. And I don't want to get too, like, in the weeds with cap stuff, but, you know, if someone signed, like, a Stanley Johnson, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson type deal from last season or a Patrick McCaw type deal, wouldn't be the biggest surprise in the world. But if that kind of contract is given out, you know, anywhere close to $10 million a year, that's the level where I'd be pretty surprised.
Just a quick aside, I do not envy you or any other NBA reporters. The NBA salary cap is one of the weirdest damn things to try. I've been watching the sport for forever. Keon Clark was one of my favorite players growing up. So I've been watching this thing for a while. I still have no idea. It's like, oh yeah, maybe they'll have 4 max spot. I have no idea. That I do not envy you guys trying to figure that thing out.
Yeah, it cuts two ways. On the one hand, it does, you know, it's an area I can provide value for people, right, and try to simplify that stuff. On the other hand, I hate so much that I have to see the news that Pascal Siakam made All-NBA second team and 4 seconds after being happy for him, being like, oh, well, there goes $3.5 million more in cap space. So, it's nice professionally to be able to carve that niche out, but as a you know, as someone who Fred VanVleet's a great example, like given his story and how he's bet on himself a bunch of times, I would love for him to get every penny possible. But in the back of my head, the NBA necessitates that I kind of keep an eye on the cap sheet as I root for these guys to get paid.
Mm-hmm. And that's the next big checkmark, I think, for the Raptors this offseason is Fred VanVleet. And yeah, if one of the criteria for his contract were the space he held in my heart, then he would be getting a max contract for sure. But I just there's something about, and I understand there are different maxes in the NBA, which is a weird way to use the word max. But anyway, it's I still have a tough time thinking Fred VanVleet max player in the NBA. But it does kind of seem like that's where this is going.
I don't know if he gets all the way to the max. You know, he's entering the market in a kind of tough year where, you know, the three big suitors for him, I would say, are probably New York, Detroit, and Phoenix. Some other teams could come out and try to work out a sign and trade or clear some cap space. But among the teams that, you know, profile as cap space now, Detroit and New York are the two big ones. They could use a point guard. They could use anyone who will take their money, really. So I think, you know, I think the Raptors probably have a walkaway point somewhere below the max and a comfort level somewhere that, you know, maybe 18 to 20 million a year is kind of their comfort zone. And they'll go a little higher than that. But, you know, the max you're then talking based on current projections, like 27 million a year. And I love Van Vliet. I think he's an all defense level defender. I think the fact that he can play off the ball and shoot as well as he does is a huge part of building an offense. But for 4 years now, he hasn't been a great finisher and he hasn't been, you know, a top tier pick and roll operator, and committing the max to someone before they show those skills is, you know, it's a bit of a risk. And if you're going to bet on a guy, you know, as he says himself, betting on Fred VanVleet is, you know, he's the type of person you want to bet on. But I would be hesitant to go all the way to the max.
Yeah, it seems like such a tricky thing to maneuver for the Raptors, especially with the fan favorite that he's become. And there are a couple other guys. Marc Gasol will forever hold a place in Raptor history, if for no other reason than how bombed he got at the parade. And Serge Ibaka, a fan favorite as well. Both those contracts are up as well. What do you see the Raptors doing with those?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Raptors would be happy to have either of them back if they're willing to sign a one-year deal. And if it's a one-year deal, you pay them whatever, and it doesn't disrupt your 2021 flexibility. If they both want longer-term deals, you're talking about a guy at 35 coming off of two hamstring injuries, and you're talking about another guy in his early 30s who, yes, had a career year offensively, but is nowhere near the defensive player he was before, and who knows how that, you know, an offense-first skill set for a guy who's been a bench big the last 2 years is going to age into kind of the mid-30s. So I'd be hesitant to give either of those guys term. Happy to pay them pretty much whatever to come back on a one-year deal. But long-term is a bigger question there. There was also a report today, and I apologize to whoever reported it. It was a European reporter, and I don't remember who it was. But I guess Gasol is considering going back overseas, which is something that I had joked about on a podcast recently, saying, haha, go live with your family on the beaches of Barcelona and, like, play in the ACB league and for the Spanish national team. And Gasol owns a third-tier Spanish league team over there. And, you know, I was joking, but it sounds like that's on the table for Gasol, actually. So, you know, maybe that decision gets taken out of their hands for them.
It feels weird because all of these decisions come with the, well, you don't want to spend too much money going into next offseason because of the big tickets are available. But this is also a team that's within a couple shots of still playing in the Eastern Conference Final. With potentially some big tickets coming back and you don't know what's going on with Fred VanVleet, where does the improvement come for the Raptors going into next season? Because I'm imagining they still want to be competitive too.
Yeah, and the honest truth is, even if they didn't want to be competitive, it's really hard. It would be tough for this team to bottom out in a meaningful enough way to, like, the 2021 draft is really nice. And if someone came calling for one of your vets and offered a lottery pick, like, you really have to consider it because the chance at a top pick in that draft is pretty enticing. But, you know, if we're just talking, like, fall out of the playoff race and tank for a pick, like, I don't know that the path to the bottom of the East is that easy because there are so many bad teams. I think more realistically, you know, the Raptors put a value on winning, and they put a value on winning not only to continue building up the Raptors as one of these franchises that players might want to come to, but they also see it as a good development tool where, you know, Siakam, VanVleet came back better this year in part because of their experience in the finals. And the hope would be Siakam comes back better next year in part because of his experience against the Celtics. So I think they value that stuff. And I think, you know, I think they would love to be good still. And as long as Kyle Lowry and Pascal Siakam are on your team, you're going to be all right. And if OG Anunoby can take, you know, another step forward into, you know, maybe he can bump from fifth option to third option at times, and you see some growth there, you know, that's maybe how the offense gets a little better. And I think even if they lose a piece or two, this still has the core of, you know, a top top eight at worst and probably top five defense.
Do you think this is going to be a team that's overly active in this year's free agency, or is it going to be much like we saw last year where it's the Rondé Hollis Jeffersons of the world coming in?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's going to be similar to last offseason, both because of the way their cap situation stacks up and because, like, all there is on the free agent market this year really is like the Rondé Hollis Jefferson, Stanley Johnson types. Like, there are some pretty interesting lower end RFAs and some pretty, you know, so there'll be some vets that if you had to plug them in as, you know, your third center or something like that, or your fourth wing, like, you wouldn't be unhappy about it. But there aren't a lot of guys to chase anyway. So I think it'll be, you know, I think they're going to value stability with how weird the offseason is going to be. And they'll value continuity a little bit. And then, you know, in those spots, I think they've shown pretty clearly, too, that they want to skew young when you're filling out the roster, because there's a little more chance you hit on a Terrence Davis type than there is, you know, Anthony Tolliver comes in and gives you an unexpected boost. So I think they'll lean young in those spots. If people want a name, the one I keep mentioning is Harry Giles, who is an unrestricted free agent center from Sacramento at an age when guys are normally restricted because Sacramento bungled that situation. That's the type of guy I could see them, you know, high draft pedigree, didn't work out with a bad organization. That to me screams Raptors reclamation project.
As for the teams that are playing, we are down to the final four. A couple very notable omissions from what a lot of people thought the final four was going to look like. Jamal Murray, an incredible performance against the Jazz. This last series was more Jokic, but either way, that has to be one of the better, probably the best story of the bubble, is what the Denver Nuggets have been able to do. What did you make of Game 7 and toppling Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's, you know, I'm a huge Jamal Murray guy because we're from the same area here in Ontario. And when not many basketball players come from your area, you gotta claim them hard. So me and Jimmy Skeets from No Dunks are all over the Jamal Murray love. But I think it's great. And I think, you know, Denver's been an interesting team to watch build over the last couple of years, where Jokic is such a novel piece. There's nobody like Jokic. And how do you build around that guy? And what can your ceiling be if he's your number one? And I think answering those questions is a lot of fun. And I think Jamal Murray finding his own as kind of the 1B and improving defensively and, you know, not always improving his shot selection, but getting a better feel for how he can complement Jokic, I think it's been great to watch. And, you know, thankfully the Nuggets got a little healthier when they did, with Gary Harris coming back, and they're still missing Will Barton. So it's, you know, they're still not even healthy and they're doing this. It's been awesome. And then on the Clipper side, you know, obviously it was, I don't think any Raptor fan will ever lose the appreciation for the Kawhi Leonard season, but you can certainly get your jokes off.
Yeah, there was a couple of them last night on Twitter. I was a little surprised at some of the grave dancing that was happening with that Clippers loss. But I think it leads to a real, when we talk about the offseason for next year, next season, whenever and wherever it happens, is going to be so interesting. You have, I think, both Kawhi and Paul George can opt out at the end of next season. Giannis is a free agent at the end of next season. All of those players have zero titles with the teams they currently are playing with. Like, it just, I think next year, the finals are going to be great this year, but next year is going to be so interesting with all those storylines.
Yeah, and this is the great thing about the NBA is it's almost become, you know, pandemic aside, it's become basically a 10-month-a-year sport where this final four will be awesome. That Miami-Boston series is already off to a great start. You've got a big underdog story in the West, and then you could end up with Lakers-Celtics, which is like the marquee matchup. And then 2 minutes after that, everyone will be flying around teams again. And that'll set up next year where basically, you know, three, four, you know, if you think Milwaukee with Giannis, the Clippers with those two, the Lakers in what'll be LeBron's age 36 season, like so many teams are going to be in a championship or bust season. And I think honestly, the championship or bust mentality is overstated at times because teams, you know, often have a slightly bigger window than that, but not next year at all. If you assume LeBron's going to eventually age and you assume that championship contention is going to affect the future of Kawhi and Giannis and Paul George and LeBron. And, you know, next year it stacks up to be, you know, maybe the biggest winner go home season ever.